Goddag og velkommen, kære lytter, til Peters Guldkorn, en podcast om guld og investeringer. Mit navn er Peter Kyhn, og jeg er din vært i denne guldvandring gennem markeder og investeringer. Lad mig først spørge dig. Hvad gør du med din boliglån, hvis renten pludselig stiger 5%? Hvad gør du med din pension, hvis aktiemarkederne falder sammen som en soufflé? Hvordan beskytter du dig mod økonomiske kriser? Hvad kan afbøde krisens effekter for dig i din økonomi? Svar på disse spørgsmål får du lidt senere her i Peters Guldkorn.
Economists are telling us now that we screwed up the good times by spending all our money. That's what we were supposed to do. That's why they were called the good times.
Endnu en gang velkommen til Peters Guldkorn, en podcast om guld og investeringer. Mit navn er Peter Kyhn. Puha, sikken en måned vi har haft, vi der investerer i fysisk investeringsguld. Målt de danske kroner er prisen på guld i løbet af den sidste måned faldet med hele 75 kroner for en troy ounce og kommet ned under de 8.000. Og ser man på toppunktet i løbet af den sidste måned, så ligger guld 110 kroner under. Lad mig lige oplyse, at en troy ounce, det er det traditionelle mål for guld, også for sølv, det er 31,1 gram. Ser man på prisen i amerikanske dollar, så ser det ikke så slemt ud, men guldprisen er alligevel faldet stødt de sidste 3 uger, så den ligger nu på lidt over $1,300 for en troy ounce. Vi, der investerer i fysisk guld, har med andre ord brug for noget opmuntring, og det er lige præcis, hvad jeg har bragt med til dig i dag. Vi har nemlig den store glæde af at have økonomen, professor Dr. Krasimir Petrov, med os i studiet i dag. Vi har faktisk fløjet ham ind fra de arabiske golfstater, hvor han har slået sine folder. Og Krasimir Petrov, det er ikke en hvilken som helst makroøkonom. Han er, som det fremgår af navnet, oprindeligt fra Bulgarien, men han har taget sin doktorafhandling på Ohio State University i USA, og siden da har han undervist på en række universiteter rundt omkring i verden. Mere interessant er det, at han siden begyndelsen af nullerne, både professionelt og personligt, har været interesseret af guld og gulds mulighed for at bevare værdi over tid, sammenlignet med andre investeringsgoder som aktier, obligationer, fast ejendom osv. Og endnu bedre er det, at han er en lidenskabelig vidende og fantastisk engageret taler om disse emner. Professor Petrov har koncentreret sig om økonomi og guld, og ikke brugt sin sparsomme tid på at lære dansk, så vi fortsætter resten af podcasten på engelsk. So, Professor Petrov, welcome to Peter's Guldkorn.
Thank you very much.
Which is the name of the show, and it's called Peter's Grains of Gold in Danish.
Okay.
I've just listened to your fantastic presentation at the Dansk Aktionærforenings Investeringsdag at SAS Scandinavia Hotel, and it was fantastic. It was a great presentation. You had lots of interested people there, and there were many questions. It was really a top presentation. Tell me, please, why is it fundamental in this day and age that people should invest in gold?
Well, this day and age, we have forgotten what gold is and what gold means, that gold has been for 5,000 years the foundation of money and monetary systems around the world, from Japan and China to Europe and America. Gold has been the foundation of money. Later on, with banking systems from ancient Rome and so forth, gold has been the foundation of the banking systems. Mm. Gold has good intrinsic values which make it the perfect, meaning the most suitable form of money. And only gold presents the best basis for building a banking system. When a financial system and monetary system is not based on gold, eventually bad things happen. Eventually, under the pressure of government, the central bank overissues the currencies, usually prints a lot more money. The currency begins to lose its value. We call this currency depreciation. The banking system eventually begins to credit and creates an unsustainable credit boom. People get to invest and speculate in unreasonable forms of investments, usually real estate and whatnot. And eventually, it leads to a monetary and banking currency and banking crisis. So all fiat monetary systems, sooner or later, usually in cycles of 10 to 30 years, experience crisis. A good example, the best example is Argentina. For the 20th century, they've had between nine to 10 currency crises. Every 10 years, they go through a currency and a banking crisis. Mm-hmm. The economy stabilizes. They get the banking, the monetary banking trend boom going on. And within 10 years, they get a crisis. And America is in a similar situation. And all countries that use paper money as money and use a banking system based on paper money eventually, usually within 10 to 20 years, go through a crisis. Unfortunately, paper money is not stable. It's inherently unstable. It is subject to overissuance. Banks rely too much on paper money. They provide too much credit and rely that in bad times they will get bailed out, and they overissue credit. In other words, they saturate the credit with the economy, and most of that credit turns out to be unsound. When that credit cannot be repaid back, the result is a banking crisis too.
And gold is the antidote, the cure for most of those woes that you
absolutely
mentioned here.
Gold is the antidote. It is the sound value that remains value, that sustains its values, not for decades, not for centuries, for millennia, for thousands of years. Gold preserves its purchasing power in terms of shoes and clothes and housing. Unfortunately, governments don't like gold because gold restricts government's ability to run fiscal deficits. They cannot print as much as they want. Gold is also highly restrictive in terms of credit. Banks cannot extend too much credit when the monetary system is based on gold. And governments cannot overborrow and get too much in debt when the monetary system is based on gold. And therefore, governments do everything in their power to keep gold out of the banking and monetary systems and to effectively demonetize gold. And they've been quite successful in since World War II to demonetize the world. And it is not a coincidence that since World War II, especially in the 60s, the world has been going on through one financial crisis to a next financial crisis every 3, 5, or 7 years. And each crisis is bigger and worse than the previous one. It's papered over with more money printing, more credit, which lays the foundation for the next bigger crisis. And right now, in 2018, we're at this, at the current situation is that the current banking, monetary, credit, currency conditions are significantly worse than they were in 2008. Stocks are a lot more overvalued and speculation is bigger. Real estate is significantly more overvalued than they were in 2008. Banks meaning a lot bigger with too much bad credit. And bonds are significantly overvalued. In other words, by every single investment and macroeconomic and credit indicator, today's monetary system and economy is significantly worse shape than in 2008. The reason is that governments did not make all the corrective actions that were needed to fix the fundamental problems in a fundamental way at the root cause. But instead, all they did was give more credit, print more money. We call this, they papered over the problems with more paper. When the next crisis comes and we have too many indicators to see that the crisis is coming soon, maybe within 3, 6, 9, or 12 months, it will be a lot worse than it was 10 years ago. And 10 years ago was a lot worse than the crisis before that in 2000, 2001 with the dot-com bubble, which was a lot worse than a 97, 98 Asian financial crisis, which was a lot worse than the 1994 Mexican crisis, known as the tequila crisis. So each subsequent crisis is bigger and worse and lays the foundation for the next. And now for the last 10 years, we've laid the perfect, unfortunately, foundation for the next much bigger crisis, probably much worse in human, modern, Western history than before, because all Asian economies have already been involved in these bubble activities. Bubbles in Singapore and Hong Kong and China are all horrible. They are just as big and just as bad as they're in London and New York and here in Copenhagen and, of course, in Stockholm and all over the world. Now we're living through a global financial bubble, global stock market bubble, global real estate bubble, global bond market bubble.
There are no areas in the world that are, so to speak, bubble-free anymore.
Not true. Commodities are still bubble free in the sense you don't hear very many people investing in palladium. Not at all. You don't hear, read anybody investing in uranium. Certainly not. There is not much or any speculation in rice. Rice is not really expensive. In other words, there is not much speculative fervor and activity going on in commodities. Not much or at all in gold and silver. These have not been yet part of the global financial bubble, and therefore they are significantly undervalued. And therefore commodities in general, and gold and silver in particular, provide a significantly better protection in coming years for the coming crisis.
Speaking about value, you mentioned at your presentation that you like to compare the price of gold with the stock prices.
Correct.
Gold to Dow, you mentioned.
Yes.
Dow Jones Index.
Yes. It is well known and said is to be the Dow gold ratio. So if anybody writes on the internet Dow/gold ratio or Dow-gold ratio, there are thousands of articles about it. Dow Jones is an indicator of the stock market, and the stock market is a good proxy for all financial instruments, all paper assets. Gold, on the other hand, is a proxy for real assets, for commodities. And therefore, Dow represents the financial sphere, gold represents the real sphere, and right now we have a huge disproportion where the financial sector, all financial assets are grossly overvalued, and real assets like rice and copper and zinc and oil and gold are relatively cheap. On average, historically, 5 to 10 times cheaper. There is no speculative fervor. They are relatively undervalued. For stocks and bonds, we say they're relatively overvalued. Now, because bonds are relatively overvalued means that the interest rates are artificially low. Now you can get an extraordinarily dirt cheap mortgage like you never can get before. A 2, 3, 4%. You can borrow money to buy real estate. So this overvaluation of bonds resulting in dirt low, dirt cheap mortgages has resulted in turn, has spilled over into real estate, has resulted in a global real estate bubble, and real estate is now, I've been calculating in my home country, Bulgaria, we just calculated in Estonia and in Finland, we also calculated here, real estate is roughly about 3 times overvalued, maybe 4 or 5 times in Australia, maybe about 5 times in Canada, maybe as much as 10 times in China. So real estate is anywhere between 3 and 5 times overvalued practically everywhere in the world. The one exception would probably be Japan, because Japan had an insane real estate bubble that blew out proportion in the 90s. The bubble burst in 1990 and has been deflating ever since for the last 28 years. So real estate is not as overvalued in Japan, and it's probably not as overvalued, or at least was not as overvalued in Eastern Germany. Eastern Germany is special for a completely different reason. During the unification, Eastern Germany blew at a time in the expectation of unification, one of the greatest real estate bubbles ever known, because the expectation is that when they enter Germany, get unified, their real estate will be as high as Western Germany's real estate. And of course, it didn't turn out that way. Just like Bulgaria's real estate, in the expectation that we're going to join the European Union, was blown out 2, 3, 4, 5 times out of proportion. Because if we enter Europe, will our prices in Sofia will be just the same as in Berlin, Rome, and Paris. But it didn't happen either. And I explained to people, hey, Ohio, where I got my PhD from, has been in America for 150 years. But real estate prices in Ohio for the last 150 years are 3 times lower than New York. And nobody in their right mind would expect that Ohio prices in Columbus, Ohio, will reach New York levels. Why do you expect Bulgarian Sofia prices to reach Paris levels? Why would expect Eastern German real estate prices to live Western German standards? But that's a different topic for another time. The point is, currently 95% of the world is engulfed in an insane real estate bubble.
So in a sense, the thing is not to go out and get another mortgage and buy gold for that.
No. If you want to protect yourself financially, you sell your property and buy gold. You sell one of your 2 or 3 properties, or 2 out of 3 properties, and convert it all into, or most of it into, gold. Yes. If I'm an individual, how to protect myself? That's a very big topic if you want to discuss. For the individual, the good protection will be 20, 30, even up to 50% of their personal wealth to be stored, stashed somewhere in gold and silver away from the financial system. Now, what will be a very good proper portfolio for an investor? Now, the old Jewish rule, which is still very decent, is you put 1/3 in cash, you put 1/3 in real estate, and you put 1/3 in gold. Now, I do believe it's a little better, or a lot better, to put actually to divide it into quarters. You put 1/4 in gold, 1/4 in real estate, 1/4 in cash and bonds, and 1/4 in stocks. This will be the uniform, balanced portfolio. If you believe that stocks are relatively undervalued, you raise your 25% to 30-35%, okay? If you believe that stocks are somewhat overvalued, you lower the 25% down to 20 or 15, and you raise your gold. In other words, you keep a relatively balanced portfolio, and what you believe is somewhat overvalued, you reduce the percentage from 25 to 20 or 15, and those that are undervalued, you raise a little bit to 30-35%, but you still maintain a balanced relatively balanced portfolio, and you keep rebalancing. If, let's say, you invested in stocks, your stocks went up, you'll take money out of the stocks, put it in gold. Mm. I was explaining today the opposite situation. If gold goes up, 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 and up, you take some money out of the gold and put it back into stocks if stocks went down. Or you put it in real estate if real estate went down. The current environment where I believe stocks are relatively overvalued and bonds are relatively overvalued and real estate is relatively overvalued, I'd balance the portfolio more to raise the gold share up to 50% and reduce the others to roughly about 15 or so, okay? Mm-hmm. And also, in these riskier times, maybe an investor could increase a little bit of cash. Why not? So you can keep still 30 or 40% in gold, and you can increase your cash position to 25, 30% too. Mm-hmm. To be on the safe side, to sleep better, not to worry that the stock market crashes. Or if the stock market crashes, you're invested at 20% and the stock market crash wipes out half of that, your gold will more than compensate for it. But it's better. You have the cash on the side to buy more stocks if the stock market crashes. Now, if real estate crashes, you'll have the cash to buy more. In other words, in a balanced portfolio with gold, no matter what goes down, you got a good move. No matter what goes up, you got a good move. In other words, no matter what goes down, you can buy a little more of it to stay balanced. No matter what goes up, you can sell some of it and buy something that's become relatively undervalued.
At the root of this, many of the rising prices in assets is the propensity of governments to print money, to produce more money. But yes. But aren't we in a situation where everybody is sort of more or less in captivity by the other party? I mean, as soon as something happens, off they go to the printing press to print more money.
Yes,
is there any sign that this will ever stop? I mean, this is a fundamental issue here because, I mean,
yes,
philosophically, people yes. could print money till the end of time.
The short answer is no. It is not possible to print money till the end of time. Sooner or later, overall inflation begins to catch on. Mm-hmm. We see now the inflation in real estate, see now the inflation in healthcare, we see now the inflation in education. Mm-hmm. From 2005, 6 until 2008, we saw the inflation in all commodities. In other words, as people get to see that governments print more and more, and inflation catches on, and they get to see that bonds don't protect, and the stocks don't protect, like they saw in the 70s, they begin to move to real assets. They begin to move to copper, zinc, steel, rice. In other words, as they move to commodities, they drive commodity inflation, which in turn drives consumer price inflation. And as consumer price inflation goes on, people start taking their money out of the bank and out of the financial system and out of stocks and out of bonds and invest even in more commodities. And this is exactly what happened from 1990 till 1997 in Bulgaria and Russia. And this is what happened in the 70s in America. So this cycle eventually ends with more inflation. Now, there is also a possibility that some of the Western world will not like to make all the necessary changes. And we may enter a 20, 30, 40 year of a depression and stagnation. Japanese style. Japan has been, and people, I still don't understand why they keep talking about the lost decade in Japan. Japan has lost almost three decades now. From 1990, Japan has not made any changes. They have just kept bailing out businesses. They have just kept bailing out government and everything else. There have been no structural changes. Japan has been going down and down and down and down for 27 years. And every single year, corporate debt is getting worse and government debt is getting worse. And Japan is currently one of the most, if not the most, over-indebted nation in the world. It is certainly the most over-indebted government. And eventually it will blow up. But they can postpone that process for a while. And again, just like Rome, it may, you know, the country, the economy does not have to recover. It may be in depression for 100 or 200 years. Or it may be like Argentina. Argentina was significantly better developed than America 100 years ago. And it could be on a 100-year decline and getting from bad to worse to worse, and it can keep going down and down. There is no end to how worse things can get. Essentially, there are different routes, but unless the foundational problems are solved, one way or another, problems will be worse. Now, America, things were going so bad in the 70s that eventually they had to elect Ronald Reagan. Paul Volcker had to raise interest rates to fantastic 22 or 25%. Long-term bonds were yielding 18% to really choke all credit in the economy and to purge all bad businesses, all bad credit. In other words, the financial system in the economy needs to go through the cleansing process where all bad and inefficient businesses are driven out of business to be replaced with better, more competitive industries and businesses. Japan has not done that. Okay, America postponed this problem. So it will depend on how each government will want to attack the problem. If they will even attack the problem, or they'll just mask the problem like Greece did for a long time.
That's true. Thank you very much for mentioning that reality will catch up with us sooner or later.
Correct. And governments always postpone the problem to make it later if they could.
That would be a thing for a psychologist to explain. I think it goes for many of us human as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for being with us today. And thank you for introducing us to many different topics. Because in order to understand the need to invest in gold, you need to understand the woes that are inherent in those things that are not gold.
Well, gold has been for thousands of years, has been the core of the monetary and financial universe. It always has been, and even now it is, even though governments tell us that gold is a barbarous relic. So every currency has been based on eventually silver and eventually gold, and this is still, since there have been human civilizations and money, the financial center of the system, and it is still today, even though governments deny it. And it will be most likely based on 5,000 years of history.
Thank you very much. Thank you once again. Mange tak til Dr. Petrov. Det var et fantastisk interessant overblik, han gav os her, og vi hørte jo om meget andet, der ikke var direkte relateret til guld. Men det handler jo om at forklare, at for at man kan forstå nødvendigheden af at investere i guld, og nødvendigheden af at placere noget af sin velstand i guld, så skal man forstå, hvilke dårligdomme der ligger i meget af det andet, man kan placere sin velstand i. Og det synes jeg, at Dr. Petrov har forklaret på udmærket vis til os alle sammen. Jeg kan fortælle, at nede i beskrivelsen, nede i indholdsfortegnelsen for vores podcast, der viser vi flere af de links og adresser osv. osv., som kan bruges til at få mere at vide omkring det, som Dr. Petrov har talt om. Denne podcast bringes til dig af Darvex AS, og jeg anbefaler dig at kigge forbi på darvex.dk for at finde flere oplysninger om, hvad guld kan gøre for dig. Du kan også som lytter til denne podcast, benytte dig af en særlig rabatkode. Den hedder... podcast, så du kan slippe lidt billigere næste gang, du køber lidt af det gule metal hos Starvix. Og så vil jeg bede dig, kære lytter, hvis du har haft gavn eller glæde eller morskab af denne podcast, om at styrte over til iTunes, eller hvor du henter dit indhold. Følg os, abonner på os, giv din mening til kende, så vi kan komme højere op, længere op, mod toppen i søgemaskinerne. Tak endnu en gang, og her er det mig, Peter Kyhn, der fløjter af i guldfløjten. Vi høres ved.